judicial affairs. And who's leading the delegation? The leader of the delegation. And then we are going to also tell you who you are talking to as we go on.
Okay. Thanks very much. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Rendani. Surname is Randera. From the National Treasury Public Finance Division, responsible for security departments.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Mashudu Bija, from National Treasury, Public Finance, specifically looking after the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. Thank you.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Tembekile Plaiki, Parliamentary Liaison, National Treasury.
Yeah, the support staff.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, honorable members and colleagues. I'm Bulela Matigani, the Secretary of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Vlalem Janssen van Rensburg. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Morning, Chairs. I'm Calvin Mangani, the Colonel Advisor for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Morning, members, colleagues. I'm Peter Daniels. I'm the Content Advisor for the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
Morning, Chair members. I'm Peter Gavin, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Minister of Defense.
Is that yours?
Okay. My name is Chidima.
Talk to the mic.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Chidima. I'm from PNG.
Honorable members, my name is Batando. I'm also from PNG.
Have you all introduced yourself? No, we haven't come to you, honorable.
Morning, Chair. My name is Adetongwan, the committee assistant.
Thank you very much. Let us introduce ourselves to you, because you are not used to coming to us. The honorable member on my right is Honorable Isao. I'm Malusi Stanley Mutimele. I'm the co-chair of this Joint Standing Committee on Defense. On my left is Honorable Duma Mlambo, is also the co-chair of this Joint Standing Committee on Defense from the NCOP. Other members will join us as we continue with our presentation. I'm sure you understood, you had a full understanding what was the presentation is all about. Over to you. The apologies will be recorded. They must be recorded. Who's the leader of the delegation? Rendani.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. It's like we've got a technical glitch. The presentation that we prepared, it was on PowerPoint. It's like now it's on a PDF. I'm not sure as to whether I can manage to... I can't scroll down. But it's...
Rendani, you go on. That will not bog you down. We have hard copies. Members have hard copies. Yeah?
Thanks, Chair, for the invitation. It's happening at the time where we are really grappling with some of the issues in the Defence Force, working together with them, with the departments. I won't bother much on slide 1, on slide 2, which is just the outline of the presentation.
I will skip that slide because we're going to cover all the issues indicated on that slide. Let me start by presenting the fiscal framework so that we can put the discussion within the context. Slide 3 is the fiscal framework. What it does, it mainly portrays the revenue and the expenditure and the balance thereof and the contingency reserve. The contingency reserve is that allocation for the what if. Normally it gets allocated in the adjustment budget. You will see that the main budget balance there, we are not balancing the books, we're in red. And again, we also have percentages of that as a percentage of GDP, that gross domestic product. So the non-interest allocation, that's the money that the government spends. The debt service costs, because we borrow this money, we must pay some interest. That's the money that we must pay. So we have got a deficit over the medium term. On slide number 4, basically what it portrays is the budget at the time when it gets presented in February and what it turns out to be in the adjustment budget. We're starting right there from 2015 up until the budget which was presented in February this year. The main important point there is that we have been revising the expenditure downward. Like if you check, given the lower economic growth, government proposed expenditure reductions of 10 billion in 2017-18 and 15 billion in 2018-19 in the 2016 budget, meaning that that's the budget which was presented in 2016, February. And then in the 2017 budget, further reductions of 10 billion in 2017-18 and 16 billion in
2018-19. Rendani, let me just interject. Did you see the what we require on the agenda?
Yes, we're getting there.
Yeah, we want you to zoom in.
To zoom in there.
Yeah,
okay.
I want you to zoom in straight there. Tell us what is required.
Okay.
From the department, so to save you a lot of time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let me jump to slide 6. Slide 5 is just the budget for defense program. So that one is no. Coming to slide 6, what it shows in there is budget broken down by economic classification. If you look over time, it's especially COE, that's the blue part, that compensation of employees. In the budget review, the balance is supposed to be 40% compensation of employees, 30% goods and services, and 30% capital. So, and what you see on that slide is that compensation of employees, in terms of the budget review, it was supposed to be 40%, and now around 16-17, it's sitting at 57%. So, meaning that we still yet to get that balance right with the current budget, of which now the ratios, they are not in line with what the budget review says. Okay? So that's slide number 6. It's in terms of the economic classification, it's not in line with what the budget review, defense review says. Okay? Then I will move over to slide 7, in short. It's basically showing personnel numbers. There is still a slide that shows that in milestone 1, personnel numbers in defense, they're supposed to be 66,000. And in here, this slide, it shows you that that will still remain at about 77,500.
So, meaning that we are not in line with milestone one. And yet in here, we are projecting 77,000. So we can link that with what I presented earlier. The 57% share of compensation budget, which in terms of the budget review, defense review is supposed to be 40%. So, which therefore means that we are not yet there. So that's one of the requirements, that we must align our spending with what the defense review says, including the personnel numbers. I'm still going to talk about personnel numbers in the slide. Slide number 8 is basically stating what is given. Milestone 1 is arrest the decline in critical capabilities through immediate and direct interventions. Milestone 2, reorganize and rebalance. The key word there is rebalance the defense force as the foundation for future growth. One of the rebalancing is what I indicated earlier, the 40-30-30% rule, of which now in reality we're sitting with 57%, for example, which is compensation of employees, which is taking the bigger part of the budget. And that is not in line with the defense review. Milestone 3, and in our view, milestone 1 and 2, because the 40-30% is irrespective of the budget. With the current budget that we have, that's what the defense review says, we must see that balance of 40-30-30, of which at the moment is 57 and some other numbers. So milestone 1 and 2, in our view, this is a sort of a planning phase. Given what we have during the reforms internally, if you read the defense review, especially I think chapter 9, it talks of right-sizing in terms of the numbers and all of that. So milestone 1 and 2, it also talks about the delegation within the defense, some reforms that they have to do themselves. So that's the planning phase. And then milestone 3, create the sustainable defense force that can meet other defense commitments. Now it begins to talk of now building on that foundation after getting the house in order currently, now building on that like capacitation and all of that. Milestone 4, enhance the defense force capacity to respond to emerging threats. Milestone 5, defend the republic against imminent and dire threats. So that's the end state. So I've already indicated the last two bullets, that the understanding is that the first two milestones are planning milestones. This involves the development of an implementation plan and implementation of reforms within the defense force, given what we have, to arrest the decline in critical capabilities and reorganize and rebalance the defense force as the foundation for future growth. So it is only in milestone 3 where we feel we can begin to consider additional funding, because like I indicated, milestone 1 and 2, it's given what we have, doing the rebalancing, getting the things right. Slide number 9, it portrays what it is in the defense review. In terms of personnel numbers per milestone, you can see personnel numbers in milestone 1 is 66,000. And in my previous slide, we indicated that they are projecting to stay constant at 77,000. And the defense review, it talks of right-sizing the numbers, creating different exit mechanisms so that people can exit at 40, 50, and all of that. Milestone 2, growing the numbers to 101, milestone 4 to 189,000. That's in terms of defense personnel. So in here, I must highlight that this is 2013-14 prices, SE. The budget was 43, growing to milestone 4 to 88,000. Right now, the budget is about 47 billion. Defense budget as a percentage of government expenditure, 3.6 in milestone 1, in milestone 2, 5.4, milestone 3, 6.8, milestone 4, 8.2%. That's defense spending as a share of the total government spending. And then as a percentage of GDP, milestone 1, 1.1%, and then growing to 2.4% in milestone 4. Let me also share with you, honorable members, in terms of the funding requirements. That's slide number 10. So the funding requirements, they are broken down per program, budget program in the Defense Force. So the current budget in the Defense Force is $47 billion. And the additional in year one, it means that it's going to be $43 billion, growing to in year seven to $70 billion. We're almost doubling the budget of the Defense Force. In order to implement the defense review.
Say it again.
This is additional requirement over and above what we have currently. So if we have to implement the defense review, these are the billions that we have to inject in the Defense Force. So $43 billion.
Honorable Marie, and that other honorable member next to Honorable Isao is Honorable Motashuping.
I just want to get where we're starting. So in other words, what you say for year, based on the current budget, in year one, we actually require 90 billion rand.
Yes.
So it's a 47 plus the 43.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
90 billion. Yeah.
So this figures are from the department.
So this is what was presented when we engaged as part of the process, the budget process, the one which was presented recently. So I must also highlight that in adopting the defense review in 2015, Parliament recommended that defense will give assurance on the affordability of the defense review, including total cost estimation of each milestone. And again, at the medium-term expenditure committee recommended that defense should develop a proper implementation plan and costing for each milestone of the defense review. I think most importantly, I must also highlight that there is a task team constituted by of treasury personnel, staff, and defense, primarily looking at the costing of the defense review. From our side, one of the requirements is also to look at the special defense account as to whether how are those projects aligned to the milestones. So slide 11, it only shows the transfers to the special defense account. You must remember that this money goes into to an account which already has funds, which the balance in there is around about 3-4 billion. So I mean that over and above what we see in there, there is a balance of 3 or 4 billion. And one of the things that we still have to interrogate together with the defense is how SDA projects are aligned to the milestones. Yeah, that's slide 11. And then let me also highlight some current policy issues. One of which is dealing with pressure on compensation of employees. In my initial slides, I highlighted the balancing, which we are not yet there. So it means that we are not in line with the requirements of the defense review, the 40-30-30 rule. Because one of the challenges is that Defense Force is currently sitting with undeployable members, the majority of which there are about 50-55, and we're talking of around about 13,900 or so, and undeployable, meaning that if we don't have a solution to deal with undeployable, we will be sitting, because over time, people, they grow, they graduate to that category. They call them patrons, meaning that over time, if we don't have a strategy, we will be sitting with a lot of undeployable members. So this is one of the challenges that we're grappling with now. And this also ties now with the compensation of employees ceiling. Honorable members, you will remember that as part of the presentation by the minister last year, there was a ceiling on compensation budget, a ceiling on compensation budget for all the departments. And again, we also the issue of personnel reduction versus rejuvenation. So we're sitting with undeployable. So how do we deal with, because you're supposed to be fit. The physical fitness matters in the environment. So, and again, the issue of dealing with undeployable versus rejuvenation, bringing in new blood. Because internationally you find that people, they stay in defense force for 20 years. Maybe you'll join at the age of 20, but at the age of 40, other countries have got different strategies, you know, to exit members, because beyond that age, they are considered as undeployable, no longer fit. So the 13,000 that we're sitting with is part of the challenge. Because even if you look in terms of age category, those ones below age 45, the numbers are shrinking, but those ones above 45 years old, numbers getting bigger and bigger. So meaning that we won't have at some point we won't have an efficient and effective defense force. So if we talk to the balancing of 40% COE, so the compensation budget, it could also address also the strategies on dealing with members who are no longer fit to be in the defense force. Unlike myself, I can stay in the treasurer up until 65 for fiscal fitness, is like it's not an issue, but in the defense force, fiscal fitness is an issue. And again, one other thing, there is the white paper on South African participation in international peacekeeping mission. One of the things that we are also dealing with in defense, with the defense, is there is a sort of an exit clause there. I think it's section 6. To say that white paper, it provides for exiting at some point from peacekeeping. For example, I think we've been in the DRC since 1999 or so. So to say what is the exit strategy, because the white paper, it provides for an exit strategy. When is it getting implemented? So, and again, we're also sitting with the challenge of increasing ordered commitment given the tight fiscal space. I mean, it's a reality that the economy has not been growing. We've been hoping that it's going to grow. We've been cutting the budget, given some other pressures, like funding higher education, you know, social services, health services, security services, and all of that. And yet the PEF cannot absorb those pressures. And again, conditions of service, I've spoken about it, retirement at the age of 60 or 65, the notion that you can be a soldier for life. I'm not sure as to whether in the environment one can be a soldier until 60 or 65, given what I highlighted, the physical fitness. And yet, in the defense review, it talks of right-sizing the defense force, milestone one, getting the number to 66,000, including a provision for exit mechanisms, which at the moment we don't have. Retention of United Nations reinvestment. We're also engaging the Defense Force because they're making a request to retain funds that they get from the United Nations from participating in peace missions. And one other thing is the endowment properties and own revenue generation. There are those properties which are owned by the Defense Force themselves. So and they are making a case for generating the revenue and keep the revenue in order to do certain things. The last bullet there on slide 12 talks to Defense Review 2015 task team, which is in place, is between us and Defense Force, trying to come up with a solution to some of these problems so that we implement the Defense Review. I think I must also highlight one thing, that the implementation of the Defense Review, the solution doesn't necessarily lie in the allocation of budget. There are certain reforms that are supposed to be done, like balancing. That I've spoken about. It's supposed to be done by the Defense Force themselves. So, and some other things which are internal processes like delegation of powers, authority within the Defense Force, all those things, not necessarily funding. The reforms that we have to see, like what is the strategy? Can you be a soldier for life up until 60? It talks of right-sizing the numbers, taking them down from 79, you grow from 66 up until, I think, 188. Okay, and then in conclusion, the Joint Standing Committee on Defense will consider requesting the Department of Defense to provide its implementation plan and costing of such plans of the to the committee for interrogation. Recommendation of the task team on the implementation, costing, and viable funding options for the defense review will be taken to the medium-term MTEC medium-term expenditure committee for interrogation or consideration. I must also highlight that the Department of Defense is currently developing a funding model that is looking at the traditional and non-traditional way of funding, and this is still yet to be shared with the National Treasury. One of which I've highlighted on endowment properties, it's like they're doing something. When the time is ripe, we're going to engage. And then the National Treasury is looking at a very long-term implementation agenda of the defense review and the level of defense ambition. And the implementation of the review will have to take into account the realities of a constrained fiscal framework of the country, given some other pressing needs. There seems to be an unwillingness from defense to implement reforms that could free resources towards the implementation of some of the defense review objectives, implementation of exit mechanism for undeployable SADF members, because as part of the engagement, MTEC engagement, we were talking about the issue of the exit mechanism, given the 13,900 or so that can no longer be deployed. To say, defense force, let us explore options here. How many can those be exited through your own means? If we go small in terms of the exit, these are voluntary sort of mechanisms. If you have to go small, how much will be needed? If you have to go big in terms of that, how much will be needed? So we engage at our level, you know, and then they indicated that they're going to go back and look at the numbers, given the age profile and all of that. But at the end, it never materialized because they came back to say, no, for some other reasons, they are no longer going to exit members. And then we said, now, what do we do? What do we do because we're sitting with undeployable? I mean, the issue of exit mechanism, the engagement started long before even the defense review was approved in 2014 to 2015. As part of trying to come up with alternatives, we were saying that, so given that even some costs are guarded by private security, can't we have some of these maybe members who are no longer fit in the environment, maybe they can be deployed to guard the cost, or maybe to correct mass services. You know, we're trying to come up with all those exit strategies long before it was even approved. So, but we also, our ministers also got engaged on this matter of personnel, given the pressure, because in the budget, in terms of community classification, compensation of employees is the biggest driver. Like in that slide, it takes 57%. So recent engagement with defense force shows that implementation of defense will no longer follow a milestone approach, but the implementation will focus on arresting the decline by having 5 work packages that combine the objectives of milestone 1, 2, 3. In our last engagement, they were talking of packages. We still have to understand more of these packages, but it's like milestone 1, 2, 3 is package 1. My colleague can correct me if I'm wrong, but the language is that now of packages. So what's the trying to understand, how does packages talk to milestones? Because like I indicated, milestone 1 and 2 is more of with what we have, what do we do, the planning, the reform, the planning phase, and then it's at milestone 3 where we can begin to see the capacitation, how can we deal with the issue of additional funding in order to implement the defense review. That ends my presentation. I'm not sure as to whether my colleague has got anything to add. Thanks very much.
Do you have anything to add?
Thanks, Chair. Just a little bit, just to clarify the issue of our engagement and the formation of the task team. The task team has been formed. We started to engage with the Department of Defense, I think, since November, precisely on the issue of the defense review. So so that we all have a common understanding from Treasury side and the Department of Defense side, so that we can get to a point where we agree on the costing. I mean, my colleague here shared a slide that was showing huge numbers, additional requirement from the Department of Defense to implement the defense review. So our interaction is to find a common understanding in terms of how does the Department of Defense come up with those numbers, first of all, and so that we can get the credibility of numbers, so that when we go to the medium-term expenditure committee during budget discussion, precisely on the implementation of the defense review, when we have to motivate to cabinet to consider maybe additional resources towards the defense review, those numbers should be credible, and we should have agreed, both Treasury and Defense, to say these are the numbers that we can take to cabinet, perhaps for consideration, should economic climate allows. Because currently those numbers, we were a bit in disagreement, but we are engaging through the task team as required. We are having several meetings lined up, and that's where the issue now that we have realized that the defense review, as it has been approved by Parliament, you have seen that it talked of milestones, from milestone 1 up to milestone 5. But currently it seems on the face of it that the Department of Defense now is looking at combining almost milestone 1 up to 3 into 1 through these 5 packages, so to speak, so that there can be this issue of arresting the decline of the defense force. So instead of taking time doing these planning phases, the approach seems to have changed slightly from the Department of Defense to say, perhaps let's bring everything together and see how we can implement the defense review much quicker. I think that's just a clarity that I thought I should share with the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The honorable members, it will be over to you, but let me just say that from the presentation, it would seem that we must not forget that we are not dealing with DOD, we are dealing with Treasury. And then I want us to be focused on what is required from DOD, so that when we interact with DOD, we should be very clear as to what we want them to do in order to comply with the requirements of Treasury. Over to you, Honorable Marie. Before you go, the Honorable Member who has just come in is Honorable J.G. Skosana. Honorable Marie, thank you very much. Honorable Isao, you'll follow.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. My apologies, Cape Town traffic. I want to start off by commenting on the presentation because it's, you know, I always believe that you can have the best plans in the world, but if you haven't got money to support that, you've got nothing. Then it's wishful thinking, and then it's, you know, sky in the pie. So eventually, you have to cut down and you have to look at the realities. Just on in terms of slide 5, can I just ask you, whether in terms of those allocations per program, what interrogation from your side was involved in to make sure? I know the Minister of Finance has said many times it must be, you know, essential stuff, it must be value for money, it must be focused at specific outcomes and cost cutting and all those kind of things. To what extent have you interrogated each of those programs to make sure that it actually fits in with that narrative of the Minister of Finance, that we cannot spend money on nice to be's or luxuries, but rather cut our cloth to size. So that this is my first question on that one. Then, in terms of what you've mentioned about milestones on slide 8, but also now on the last one. Because my question that I've marked there was, it was reported, Chairperson, correct me if I'm wrong, last year it's reported to us that they will look at 2 packages. So the fact that there's 5 packages for milestone 1 to 3 is news for me, and I don't think we have had that submissions from the DOD. They were talking about two packages. The one, what can they do with the current budget allocation? And the second one is those outside the current allocations. So I mean, because remember what they've reported at the beginning of last year was that for milestone one, they require an additional 1.8 billion rand, which we are, or whatever, but it was reported, it was not allocated at that stage. So therefore, they can't even start with milestone one, purely because of that. And so there was no additional money to start the process of milestone one. And I just need to understand more, you know, I pick up what you have said, that it seems like there's not clarity between yourself and DOD with regards to this additional funding and the costing and also these packages. So it seems like there's even more confusion now on my side in terms of where we stand with that. Then in terms of those slide 9, where you've mentioned that you've used 2013-14 prices. Was that basically your base price? And what did you use for yearly increments? Is that, you know, CPI? Or what did you use? Because obviously the milestone 4 cannot be 2013-14 prices. There should have been a provision for a increase of costs. And in that, my question is, often we see that people talk about CPI increase, but what I refer to as military CPI or military price index is totally different from consumer price index. Totally, totally. We know that we sit with expensive stuff. Much of the technology is imported, or components of the technology and the equipment and the is imported. So we probably sit, and I don't know what the exact, I've asked that question and nobody knows what is the military price index, if I can use that phrase for a lack of a better word. But it should probably be between 15% and 20%, especially when you take the value of the rand and the fluctuation of that. So I need to know, how did you come up with that? And what was, you know, what was your increments or to get to the eventual milestone for value? Because we must also get to the credibility of that. Then, in terms of the special defense account, Chairperson, my concern is, and maybe to you guys as well, we appreciate what you're telling us here. The problem is, who's got oversight over that account? It's not us, but it's part of our budget. It's supposed to be intelligence, but when you ask them, they said they've never seen anything like that. So it currently seems like nobody has got oversight over the special defense account. So we've got no idea whether that will be spent in line with the milestones. I mean, how can we determine what happens in the special defense account is in line with milestone and the plans? There's no ways. Even the Auditor General has reported that they cannot, you know, give a opinion on the special defense account because they're not allowed to do this. So there's a problem for me, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to do that. Because clearly, I mean, there's never any feedback whether that is in line, whether that complies, because the Intelligence Committee has got no opinion of milestones in the Department of Defense, so they cannot do that, and we're not allowed to do that. Then, in terms of...
Honorable Murray, just wait, there is some sort of interjection. Yeah?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it comes from Honorable Murray's regarding the matter of the money that you are talking about that you think it's not accounted for. In the previous years, we did get an explanation. I think Honorable Isao knows about it. Can we at least focus on this?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And look, the the question of the special defense account, we may not have discussed it yet. It's a discussion for some other time.
Yes.
I will also sometimes give you the feedback from the, because the Auditor General also expressed some concern in the briefing between us, then we'll tackle it in another meeting.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't think the treasurer would be in a position to assist. Thank you, Honourable. We just
I'm just mentioning that because I appreciate what you're doing, but you know, we need something to do about that. Mm-hmm. I just need to raise that. In terms of that slide 12. In terms of those, call it undeployables, but also that plus 45, over 45, under 45, do we have information with regards to the split in, let's call it ranks? So in other words, you know, are mostly foot soldiers, irrespective of their age, or are they senior officers, or are they petty officers? So that we just know how that you know, have we got too many chiefs and not enough soldiers, or do we have enough soldiers and enough chiefs, but just the age is the problem, and the physical condition is the problem. So I don't know if you've got anything on that. Then in terms of the United Nations reimbursements. We have said that in the past, that is a bit of a sore thumb to us, sore thumb, because we use our budget, Department of Defense budget, to send the soldiers to do peacekeeping work. But when the money come in, it goes to Treasury. And how they reported to us, then they must go and beg and please and you know, kneel before you. And then you might say, we will consider giving some of that money back to you, but not all of that. So how do we deal with that? Because we have identified that as a need for the committee to interact with Treasury in the future to say, how can we, can that be ring-fenced, or is that totally, I know, I mean, I served on the Finance Committee in the past, so I know about the Central Revenue Fund, so I understand that. But here we have got an extraordinary situation. It's not the defense force that decides. We want to go to Central Africa. It's by authority, executive authority, that they have to do that. So they've got no control over the fact that there's no cost, but suddenly it ties their hands in terms of their normal work. Have you also looked at, and I'm just asking the question from an oversight and maybe a regulatory point of view, we get paid according to the serviceability of our equipment. That's how I understand it. So in other words, if we do not have serviceable equipment, vehicles, stuff like that, then we don't get paid. But on the other hand, we've also received reports in the past that the equipment wasn't designed for that circumstances. So they have to deal with what they've got. But they don't get money to really get equipment that is designed for that. So it's a kind of a chicken and egg situation. You do not have the equipment, so you go with what you've got. Then it's unserviceable, so you don't get paid. So how do you get to a position where you've got, if that is a strategic objective and a decision by South African government to be involved in Africa, surely that government policies must support that. And that implies that there must be money to make sure that we've got the equipment, and if we've got the equipment, then we will get the money back from the UN. How do we deal with that? Because that seems to be a chicken and egg situation, and the money is not worth Department of Defense to decide, now we're going to develop equipment and products suitable for that condition so that we can get paid. We must first get the money to get the equipment so that we can get paid. Then my last one, I am concerned about your second last bullet. The page is 13, slide 13. I'm very concerned about that, besides the fact that I know my colleague will probably talk about the exit strategy. I will leave it to him to talk about that. But the fact that you say that there seems to be an unwillingness from defense to implement reforms that could free resources towards the implementation of some of the defense review objects. I think by saying that, it is a huge concern, in other words, about ability and the willingness on the part of defense side to look at those reforms. Now, clearly, if you say that, it implies that you have identified possible reforms that you believe should be considered and for which they are unwilling to consider and implement that. So you need to give us more information. You need to elaborate on this. You need to take us into your confidence, because I mean, we depend on the information that gets provided to us, so that we can take that to the Department of Defense and say, why don't you do this? Give us a reason why you're unwilling to do this, because that's just a statement, and we need more information. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Isao, you follow.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. I think I want to just raise the issue. We're dealing with Treasury and not the Department. And what I hear is that the engagement starts November 2016 or 2015. Can I just have confirmation when the engagement started?
Okay, let me just clarify something. In here we are referring to formal structured engagements with terms of reference which are going to be signed off by the two parties. But as part of the budget process, we have been dealing with most of these issues. Like I indicated that the issue of the pressure on compensation of employees, it started long before even the budget, a defense review was approved. So in here, we're just referring to a formal, structured task team to deal specifically with this. But we've been engaging sort of in a bit and pieces of the things that talks to the defense review, but not in a sort of a task team structured with terms of reference known by the two accounting officers in the two departments.
Okay, I've raised the issue because it's quite clear. If Treasury comes here and says that they don't understand what is the milestones and packages and things, then clearly the terms that are going to be used and the discussion that will be framed in terms of understanding the defense review is not quite clear. So those are things one clear up in the first instance, and then you continue with your negotiations. My concern is the MEMS, the exit mechanism. Treasury has issued a directive of 10,000 people had to be, of course, retrenched, removed, so that there's a rejuvenation that also takes place, but also to get the balance right, and also in terms of the budget constraints that there is currently. So that was never implemented. I hear from the task team here that there's a reason, we don't know what the reason is, that people that the defense actually did not conform to that directive and to actually implement it. We also know there has not been money forthcoming for the MEMS. In none of our documents is a commitment from Treasury, because anybody that wants to institute a MEMS must have money to exit people, and there must be some golden handshakes taking place to get people out of the system in the first instance, and then you start the recovery process, where you then make gains because it's budgeted now and that money can then be reinvested into your force. There's no such indication from Treasury. Maybe some discussion, yes. Maybe some ideas. But no commitment that they ask for 10,000 reduction, but what is their commitment to the members? So That is not clear for me at all. The other one is, in terms of the E&E, there is a reduction that will take place from 78,345 in 2016-17 to 69,609 in 2017-18. If that is in the E&E, and your comment that you make, sir, Honorable Chair, is the one that there is no movement or no exit taking place, then it's not really true. Is this natural attrition? We need to know if it's not people just dying or people just retiring, and that number's come down and they're not being replaced. We know the consequences that all our training for MSDS, on average about 4,000, most of those students that have finished the course to go into the armed forces are on the street, unemployed. So if Treasury doesn't realize the importance of it, that we're putting out trained individuals that we invested money in, that's supposed to rejuvenate our force, and the MEMS is not executed, we are shooting ourselves in the foot, literally. So much for an armed force. We're shooting the wrong place. So I've got a serious concern that, yes, there's lots of ideas, but there's no commitment. And Treasury can blame the defense, but they are not coming to the party either. We do know that there are serious cuts in the budget, 10 billion and 16 billion, and the Department of Defense was required to cut just under 1 billion. Mm-hmm. The department is in discussion currently that they want to refurbish one mill, and that's going to cost over 1 billion. They're just finishing off the refurbish of two mill, which is at 600 million. And will probably be plus some additional cost because of delay. But that is running. We need money to finish off one mill, which is so important for the healthcare of our soldiers and our military vets, and it's in a bad state. The services are outsourced at a higher cost, which is costing this department. So they're cutting back on medication. Even now you can go up there, people come there, only those that are, that can get medicine, others must come back tomorrow. If not tomorrow, they come back the next day. It's happening right now as we sit here. Our concern is Treasury, really, about our soldiers. So I hear the complaint, I hear the understanding, but these are real issues that we deal with as a committee. And these are the real people that we meet every day. Some way we need to meet. I don't mind the critique and other things taking place, but we need to get to the table to sort out matters. It's our country, and it's the protection of our country that is at stake. So that is a serious one for me. Concerning the United Nations reimbursements, if Treasury is of the view that money goes back to the pot, is that money in the first instance considered contingency funds set aside of an average of 1.5 billion, so that they can say, yes, it's allocated as a contingency, should you get refunds, automatically it will come to Treasury, it doesn't go back into your account. My understanding, it is not a contingency fund. That money is taken from the budget, actual budget, at the expense of our defense force for some peace mission. And that money doesn't go back into the defense, it actually goes to Treasury. So unless that is cleared up and money is rightfully to be back in the defense, then I think the policy needs to be made that those monies actually go back into the defense budget. We've been complaining. Now, if the Treasury is serious and they understand the environment, then of course we would support if it is not contingency funding and get on with our job, get the money back into the defense account. That's what we want as a committee. The other one is, of course, when we ask about the packages, I want the packages, our understanding that milestone one comes with packages. Milestone two comes with packages. Now, the packages may be in the form of equipment and things, and the other part of the packages may be the human resource. If there's a difference in the joining of the packages, then that had to be sorted out beforehand. If the defense review, and that is also one of the issues historically. What was Treasury's involvement in the entire defense review process? Were they actually involved? Were the commission, were they properly briefed on these things? Because Treasury is always seeming at a very distance when it comes to these matters. That's supposed to change the whole landscape of South Africa and its defense. And the role that we play on the continent. So I don't know really historically, because when I'm hearing own engagements now, certain issues then, so there was no serious continuous engagement on a very important issue in this country, which is the defense review, which is part of the National Development Plan. The other one, Honorable Chair, I want to also raise, if we look at the issues of the, what is the issue here, of the money allocated. Now, my understanding, the 1.6 billion for milestone one, this wasn't said once on page 12 when we speak about the impacts and the allocations. But 1.6 billion was previously, I can tell Treasury it was in the previous E&E as well, in the notes as well, in the annual report as well. I can give you all the documents on the 1.6. The issue is that that money was calculated to start the process of milestone one. Largely the milestone was reforms and rebalancing. But there was still a financial factor that had to be considered. Now, if we simply write it off to say that it is only up to reforms and rebalancing, and it's a planning from milestone 1 to 3, and then only milestone 4, you start with audit commitments and with sustainability and looking at additional costs. That is not true. That is definitely not true. Otherwise, all our reports and all our things are wrong. And I've read all the wrong things. So I want to know if the Treasury makes those comments. Have they really studied those documents and understand that it's not only a planning phase and rebalancing phase. There are actually money required. And if this department is required to give one billion back, it has to refurbish something at 1 billion and a second one at just over half a billion. And there are so many things that's happening. Is it being realistic that we're dealing with this particular department that has a special role is different to other departments? How do we keep this as a sustainable unit? Our borders are threatened. Contraband is going through every. Highways are running through with cars, stolen goods. And then Treasury says, look, we are still not understanding this document and we still have to consider what all these packages are about. And people, aliens are coming into our country without permits, without documents. How people are operating in our country. How is that possible? So I say the urgency and the importance of this particular area, and I think the committee, all of us agree, that this particular department has not been dealt with appropriately and in the best interest of our country, and we pay the price for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the Honorable Co-Chair Mlambo. We'll ask a question. Before I give you an opportunity to respond, Honorable Mlambo.
So thank you very much, Honorable Co-Chair. You see, we've got the experts here, Dr. Randan. Here we are dealing with a very dire situation. As you can hear, as this committee, we take ownership of this department because this department has a constitutional obligation to secure the borders and the sovereignty of our country. Now, We requested you to come here, like Honorable Issa was saying, for the sole purpose of you explaining to us, as the department that deals with our monies, when you engage with the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. Maybe they don't show you the seriousness, but there is this seriousness and the agency that we see as the Portfolio Committee, as this Joint Standing Committee. We put blame solely on treasury. Maybe why the exit strategy was cancelled or delayed or whatever happened. Of course, we can't take people out of the system and throw them on the street if there's no proper plan, right? Because a proper plan demands funding, and that funding should come from treasury. You know, you are correct to say systems must be created so that when they exit, yes, you counted departments where they can be taken into. But every year, this department is treated unfairly by treasury. So how can, because there was a commitment before by treasury to say, yes, money is there to implement the defense review, right? Okay, the phases, the milestones. We are saying now milestone one, at the same time you contradict yourself to say, fine, one and two, that's administration, this and that. Money is there, but, you said but, because we expect maybe because of these red tapes that you have as a department. But here we are dealing with a unique kind of a department. It's not an ordinary department. According to me, my understanding of DOD, it's government also. It's the second government, according to me. You know? When you run the DOD, now we've got something that was not there hidden during the apartheid era, the military veterans, which is, you know, it's another department that needs also a lot of funding, you know. So, do you have money to give to the DOD to implement the defense review? That's my simplest question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mulambo. Honorable Skosana.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the issue of soldiers who are leaving a system due to ill health, dead cases, old age, there is an outcry in the DOD that when these people are leaving the system, there is no substitute, as Honorable Mulambo is saying. Why? Because they've got a financial problem to replace. If they replace, they can replace few of them. But I should think, Chair, it's very important to hear from the Treasurer that the budget that is allocated to defense, is it sufficient to assist the department to run, or is it just to sustain the department? There is a difference between sustainability and the running. Because if your human resource is not sufficient in the defense, then that department cannot run. Can we get a clarity on that? But fundamentally, a consideration of how to deal with this question. That's what is important, how to deal with this question of funding model, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Over to you, Treasury. Dr. Rendani, in your presentation, you touched on the question of refunding from the funding the cost incurred on the international mission, funds from the UN. I'm sure you're clear as to what is the position of this committee on that matter, that the committee supports that that money should go to Treasury, back to the Defence Force. And you should also tell us what is the position now, because you've been, we understand that you've been talking. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thanks, honorable members. You've raised a lot of questions. We'll try to deal with each one of them. The first question by Honorable Mare, the issue of defense budget, are we getting value for money? On that question, honorable member, I will start if I break it down, looking at the slide. I will refer you to the slide, the one that shows some slide 6. The biggest driver there is compensation, which takes 57%, followed by goods and services, which takes 26%, followed by payments for capital assets, which takes 17%. Like I indicated, I mean, if you are sitting with undeployable members, because what happens is that the fact that you are sitting with undeployable members, they also, over and above that, employ the reserve force. The reserve force, because they are undeployable members, meaning that it's a salary for two for one who is active. I mean, like, if we take it to a household level, is that value for money? So, because that's the biggest driver of the budget. Okay. And then I think there was a question on slide 9. What did you use? How did you come up with this? Okay. That's the slide that shows milestone 1, the budget and percentage of GDP and all of that. So that one is directly, it's a given, it's from Defense Review itself. So what we haven't done, we haven't recalculated what it means today. So that ties into the military index that you're talking about. Because as part of the exercise is to understand the assumptions. What are the assumptions that goes behind the, what lying behind the costing for the defense? Are we using CPIX or are we using what you refer to as a military index? So those are some of the things that we will try to understand. But what's on the slide there is directly from the defense review as calculated by defense themselves. I think it also talks to one of the questions to say what was the role of the National Treasury in the crafting of the defense review. I must say, Chair, unfortunately, we were not involved. We were told that, I think then that they are working on it, we'll see the product, but unfortunately, we were not involved. The military pricing is totally different. Okay, I've addressed that one, honorable member. Are you happy with my explanation?
No.
Okay.
Go continue.
Okay. SDA was oversight. Can I skip that one? The SDA one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Information on personnel split according to ranks. Unfortunately, we don't have the split according to ranks. What we have in one of the documentation is just a split according to age category. But it won't show you per rank. It's just according to age category. I think I'll give my colleague to deal in length on this UN reinvestment.
Thanks, honorable members. I think the issue of UN reinvestments, I think as someone who deals with defense specifically, I think I've noted your comments on several BRRR or budget review recommendation reports. And I've seen it coming time and time again, this recommendation. that there should be any consideration for defense to retain the revenue that it gets from the UN mission. Look, we, as Treasury, we are not opposed, if I can put it in that way, on that, or in principle. I mean, you'll recall that in 2015-16 financial year, there was a we did approve giving back defense, I think it was around 182 million rand.
Only
182 million rand. Of course, the decision there. But just to sum up, in short, this matter, the department itself has raised it again with us during the budget discussions. We are working on it. That's how I can put it. Even there was even a bilateral meeting between the Minister of Defense and the Minister of Finance. We were privy to those. We were there as well, as at technical level. So we are really working on that issue at a very technical level. But I don't want to overcommit or say anything more than that. But I just want to bring it to your confidence that this matter, it is being looked at. It's a technical issue because you will know that in terms of the Constitution, all revenues that departments generate, it has to come through the National Revenue Fund. So it's just the mechanism. How do you do it going forward? How do you make support the department going forward through the same fund? So there are some technicalities that we are dealing with, but we are really not necessary. We are not. We are with you on that one, if I can put it in that way. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not really convinced.
But they said it.
Yeah.
They said it.
Because you must know that.
Can I give you a bit of a lesson?
Okay.
The deaf say what you say, and what you say must be the same.
Yeah.
Now you've said something, but what your body language doesn't really.
can I just clarify it further?
Clarify your body language.
your non-verbal communication.
Chairperson, my non-verbal communication is because we are looking at it from a technical level, and it goes through some other committees internally within Treasury. So my body language is saying that there is that interest. Honorable member. So I think I will leave it at that. I don't want to make that comment, but we, in principle, we are working with the Department of Defense. They have made a submission. We are looking at it. We are looking at a long term. How do we deal with this problem on a long term? If Department of Defense will be in this mission, not just the UN, should it go somewhere else? How do we deal with these reimbursements at a technical level?
Remember, the honorable member is a politician, will understand the political what is body language rather than technical. Yeah.
Body language that underlines. What is the word that you use? The willingness.
Okay, over to you. Continue.
I think. Not just to reopen the issue of body language, because one of the things that defense is doing currently is looking at the funding model for defense. And they promised us that when the time is right, they're going to share with us. I mean, this issue of endowment properties, reimbursement, we don't know what's in there. So it's going to be looked at as part of the whole funding proposal by Defense Force. I mean, in there, there could be reimbursement, endowment properties, and some other things. So I just wanted to add on what my colleague was saying. And then slide 13, there was second last bullet. I think it's by Honorable Marais, talking about unwillingness. When we were trying to deal with the issue of budget cuts in government, specifically on compensation of employees, of which Department of Defense is one of the departments which was affected. We had a series of engagement with the Defense Force, a series of them at our level, SecDev DG level, ministerial level, and at DG level, there was a request to say Defense Force, because this is for the whole of government, the cuts, and you are affected. Let's look at the options. Let's look at the options. And it was even said that if the options that we are saying, like for instance, if people have to voluntarily leave the Defense Force, natural attrition, I could be at the age of 60, 58, if people have to voluntarily leave, how many of those will leave? Okay. And the second option was, if you have to go small in terms of the exit, voluntary means, how much would you need from the fiscal? If we have to go big, how much would you need from the fiscal? So that was the request. And then they turned around to say, no, not even a single member is going to exit. Then we involved our minister. And the request was, if the options that we propose are not palatable to you, give us what is palatable from your side, so that we can have an efficient and effective force. I think I must also highlight that, some of these are our family members. I mean, some of them, they're open about it when they heard about government dealing with the wage bill. They keep asking, when are you implementing MEM? Yes, when are you implementing MEM? I'm just ordinary family member. I'm ready to leave. Ordinary, I'm just talking of ordinary family members. I'm ready to leave. Yes. So, I think I'm trying to address that, the unwillingness to say, we've been engaging in negotiating, come up with the options and see what's possible. You know, to see the cost and all of that.
What's the reason
that they didn't want to implement? The reason. We were simply told that for political consideration, we don't know what it means and what is it.
Want to hear that question?
That?
What was that interjection, Honorable Issa?
No, we've been told that the department...
Press your mic.
The department refused to actually consider. So I want to know, what is the motivation, the reason from the department? What did they say? Why wouldn't they want to do it? Because I'm hearing, Honorable Chair, is it that how much it will take from the fiscus? Is Treasury tasked in telling us here they are willing to put the money down?
Okay.
Yes. Because the issue for us was to look at the number. Is this affordable or not? That's why those options, if you do it yourself, if we go small, if we go big, then we can start talking about options. So, but at the end, they came back to say, no, we're not considering anything. Yeah. Okay, issue of directive, but MEM has no money. I think I've addressed that. Natural attrition. I think I must also highlight that the cuts last time around, they were mainly on compensation budget and not any other item. Things like goods and services and capital, they were not touching the last round. United Nations reinvestment, I think Mashudu touched on it. What was anti-involvement with the defense review? I think I highlighted it. And DOD, is there money to give to DOD to implement the defense review, Chair? I hope I'm addressing the question. That was the question, is there money? I mean, obviously, if you look at the additional resources required in year one, 43 billion, definitely is not affordable. Because one of the things that task team is supposed to be doing is to break it down into small chunks, like a big elephant, and we see what's affordable and what's not. Because we can't simply dismiss to say 43 billion is not affordable, we pack it. We have to dismantle it into small components and see what can be done in the short term. And the way it was presented, the 43 billion additional, that grows to 70 billion. Obviously, our economy, the way it is growing, it cannot afford. And it was given some other competing needs. I mean, it's not affordable. But for us, it's to break down those 43 billion, 82 billion, into small chunks and see what's affordable, so that we can eat this elephant in small chunks, if possible. Outcry is it sufficient to assist the department to run the DOD budget? I mean, if we also address the cost drivers, obviously there could be some monies that can be released for some other things. Currently, I mean, we hear of how many companies, 13 companies, and we're supposed to have how many companies, 22? Oh, 15 companies, we need 22 companies. At the border. And still there are some other things that need to be done, like cyber security given to the class of which defense is one of them. But one of the things that also needs to be addressed, instead of just pumping, with what we have currently, how can we do our business efficiently and effectively? Because one of the arguments by our DG was that as part of this exit mechanism, for example, because the majority of the undeployable, they are towards the end of the scale, from 60,000, was to say this member possibly was in defense force for a long time, maybe 30 or 40 years ago. And if you bring in a new member, obviously that new member will be coming cheaper because it's at an entry level. You see? So it will be at an entry level. So by doing so, we will address the issue of exit and rejuvenation. And at rejuvenation, it will be cheaper. You see? I think there was also a question of understanding of milestone versus packages. Our understanding has always been the milestone language. The issue of package, I think we only heard it recently. I think a few weeks ago, if not mistaken.
Who came with that?
We, as part of the task team, they took us through a presentation. It's Defense Force itself that came with the issue of packages. Because our understanding of packages is not the way you understand it, like to say within milestone one, we've got packages, within milestone two, we've got packages. Milestone 1 to 3, I think it's package 1.
No, they combine everything into 5 packages.
Into 5 packages. Yes. So now we're still trying to map milestone 1 versus package 1.
Yeah. Intervention. What? This one, the one.
You want to intervene? Somebody wants to.
Oh, you want to intervene? Okay.
Who wants
to
intervene there?
The long and short of it. The terminology packages was introduced as just recently. Yeah. We have always been of the understanding of the milestone as put in here.
But you say the terminology, this concept of packaging.
Oh, you
did
mean
come, did come with the defense? Is it something from the defense? Was the terminology coined?
Oh, no.
Who came with that concept?
The package is from the defense force.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
next one, we'll note it. Yeah. Okay. Bumashud?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. As I introduced myself earlier, I specifically deal with the Department of Defense and military veterans. So within Treasury, I'm the point of call. So I engage with them on a daily basis. I'm trying to answer one of the questions which was raised.
So he's the one that was missed.
Are you? The question is.
Yeah, you say you are in trouble for saying that.
Now we know who's the guy. Okay. Now we know who's the guy.
Are you aware of the seriousness and the urgency of dealing with the Department of Defense, and that Honorable Chair and all members, as someone who deals and interacts with the department on a daily basis or every time, I think I am aware of the seriousness and the strategic nature of the Department of Defense. When you are within Treasury, our roles are quite different. We've got another division called Budget Office. So we are more on the front line, where we engage with the department and see their needs. And of course, understand the business of the department, so that when we engage internally on resource allocation, we are able to motivate accordingly and correctly. So just to put it in context, strategically, and I think it came with the Honorable Member Isao as well, about the seriousness in which Treasury. I don't think, Chair, we want to create an impression that Treasury doesn't, and we've seen this, we've noted it in several minutes of the committees, to say there seem to be no understanding of defense and its strategicness. I really want to bring it to comfort you. I hope my body language is correct this time around. to comfort you that some of the matters that we are grappling with within defense, we are aware of them and we are engaging with them on an honest basis. Even the issues of, for example, of the SGA, we have raised some of these matters with them. It's a class, that terrain is highly classified, but we are engaging with the department so that we are on the same understanding and we can assist each other where possible. I would just want to highlight another issue. It is unfortunate, Chair, as well, if I can put it that way. In an ideal situation, or in an ideal world, policy drives budget. We've got the defense review, which has been approved by Parliament. This is a policy document of the country, and it should inform budget going forward. However, as a country, we are in a very difficult position where currently there seems to be budget determining policy or influencing policy other way. What do I mean about that? I mean that because of limited resources currently, we are in a very tight situation where it can be misinterpreted as if certain policies are not being taken care of or are not important, but I think it may be just that it's unfortunate that the current defense review, which is a good policy, is coming at a very difficult moment. So the truth lies somewhere in between. How do we, taking into account the needs of the Department of Defense and balancing it against other competing needs or other resources, how do we strike the balance? And Honorable Isao, I think that's where this task team came about, so that let's reach let's have a forum where, as Treasury, we really, really deepen our understanding and reach a compromise between ourselves and the department to say, perhaps in the short term, even if Milestone 1 up to 3 wanted 1 to 3, but currently, certain things may not be affordable, but we may be able to push certain issues which are absolutely necessary in the medium term. I think I just wanted to emphasize that, Chairperson. Thank you.
You want to follow up, Honorable Ray and Honorable Isao?
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to go back to my first question, and I specifically refer to slide 5 and not 6. And that deals with what you have now elaborated on your involvement and commitment. I've asked the question whether, in terms of those programs, you have been involved in the breaking down of that, to see the priorities in those programs and whether that has been considered. I just want to use an example in terms of air defense. In air defense, we've got a 35 squadron in Cape Town, where there's one Dakota that must do the maritime surveillance and patrols, protecting South Africa's sovereignty, plus in support of Operation Pakisa, Ocean Economy, which is very important. But that one aircraft is over 80 years old. So now you can see in terms of operationals and priorities. We've got the same situation at 128 Squadron in Waterkloof, where there's supposed to be a fleet of aircraft that must support not only the peacekeeping missions, but also patrols, parabats, our special forces, and all those. But we see that there's one, they've reported us last time, and maybe a second one will be returning by, you know, spare parts and things like that. Now, if you look at the budget, then you will see there's been, you have approved extra money for lease of aircraft. Now, in the case of 28 Squadron, they must now lease private aircraft to transport the troops into Central Africa for peacekeeping missions. So that seems to be a higher priority for Treasury, in my opinion, than really looking after establishing our own air force. You must remember part of the consequences are now you're using the private aircraft plus their crew. So it means that our own pilots do not get the training, do not get the hours. So suddenly you find yourself that we have got not enough pilots, not enough crew, because they're not qualified in terms of what is required. So it's again a chicken and egg situation, but you're shooting ourselves in the foot. We even see at 21 Squadron that there are, you know, it seems like there's challenges there with regards to own aircraft versus we lease on a constant basis aircraft. Now, is that good money? Is that money well spent? I am not so sure. And that was my question. Are you involved on that level where those programs are being cut down, and is that in line with the Minister of Finance, and is there huge divisions? I must just say, on Chairperson, on that second last bullet, you've only referred to human resources. So to only have human resources and have then a generalized statement that there's an unwillingness from defense to implement reforms. Reforms most surely cannot only be on the human resources side. So in other words, if you say that there are other reforms, that there's an unwillingness from on defense side, you must be honest with us and tell us that. Don't make generalized statements, please. Because eventually we have a responsibility to follow up and make sure that defense do their work. But a generalized thing like that is not assisting us at all. And it cannot only be human resources. Or are you telling us that it's only human resources? Because that's the only one that you've mentioned. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable. Honorable Sal, you wanted to make a follow-up?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Well, Chair, I just want to also say that we've spoken about all these peace missions that are taking place all over Africa, and of course our interests, as national interests that we're driving, and that of the continent. Has Treasury ever looked at, because none of these peace missions have exploited the issue of trade and investments and bilateral that would actually benefit South Africa. So we go do a lot of work, help other countries stabilize, get security, which is good for the continent and for business, but we don't actually get into the business afterwards. Another avenue that, of course, can generate a lot of money. Just that on that point of the National Treasury and, of course, DTI and others. The other one is the 1.6 billion. I wasn't answered. My understanding and all the reports that we have, that was the initial requirement that was needed to get milestone one off the ground. Now we're looking at year one going to year seven, and we're starting with 43 billion. That was never a discussion. That is the first time I'm hearing about 43 billion now. So somewhere this is disjunct and all the other reports must now be rubbished. That's nonsense. There must have been serious thought given to that, because that figure was repeated so many times. Most of the work will be reforms, rebalancing, getting people unemployed, deployable, get them out of the system and things. All those things can be done at 1.6. There are other money that's the minimum amount required to get milestone one off the ground. I don't, that was not addressed by you. I don't see any response to it, and I see this. That's why I say this document also, we'll have to question this with the department. Where did this 43 billion and others come from that you are now stating here? 43, 48, 55, 50 additional monies to the budget. So I've got a serious concern that the documents that we have and this document now that we are briefed on is not actually speaking to each other. So.
Thank you very much. We are wrapping up. We are wrapping up. You will be the last people to respond, and then we are going to close our presentation. Over to you, Treasurer.
Thanks very much, Chair. Let me start with the last one. Yes, I agree. I think it's something that we should also take up with defense, because as part of our budget engagement, we also raise the issue of inconsistencies with numbers. So I think it's something that we could also raise with the defense force. Empty understanding of defense business. Yes, as part of our engagement, they made us to understand the defense contribution to the economy. Like, if we stabilize in Africa, I mean, there are opportunities for growth. Like the work that they are doing along the Mozambique Channel, the anti-piracy. Yes. So that directly contributes to trade, economic growth, and all of that. So without any doubt, we do understand defense contribution to the economy. And then coming to the issue of reforms, yes, Honorable Mare, we fully agree with you. Reforms are not only in respect of compensation of employees or personnel. Long before even the defense review, one of the things that we're interrogating was the defense force, are you sure you really need all these bases across the country? Do you really need them? Or you need more, or you need to scale down? Because I mean, we've adopted some of them from the former homeland. Are they strategically in areas where you want to be? You know, can you revisit some of these things? So we've interrogated a whole lot of issues, one of which is the issue of base. You know, the issue of both on the ground versus modernization. Is it now these days, is it an issue of both on the ground, that personnel, or technology? Can you sort of revisit? We're not expecting in the defense industry, but within other countries, that's a drone, it goes, you know, and we talk of boots on the ground in terms of personnel. So these are some of the issues that we've been trying to engage with the defense force. Yes, we fully agree, reforms is not only a aspect of COE. There are a whole lot of other issues that we try to engage defense force on. I've just highlighted a few. And then I think also my colleague can also chip in here regarding the understanding of budgets. I think the amount that you're also referring to, the leases and stuff, I think it was their own reprioritization, depending on where they see the need in the defense forces, their own reprioritization. It's not an additional funding. I think my colleague can also elaborate on that one. I think the last word from myself, before I give my colleague an opportunity to deal with the issue of leases. Like I indicated, we are engaging with the National Defense Force to have an efficient and effective defense force that can protect the country. I will urge the committee as part of oversight. If in terms of our allocations or recommendations as presented in the appropriation bill, if we are offside, I think in terms of the money related and Money Bill Amendment Act, I think there is that scope for engagement with the Standing Committee on Appropriation where recommendations can be made. So that's the last word. Over to you, Mashudu, in terms of addressing the leases. Thanks very much.
Honorable Mare, I think on the issue of our understanding of the current split of the budget and the efficiency and issues like that, I just want to bring it to your confidence that currently there is a work within Treasury that is being conducted by GTEC, the Government Technical Advisory Committee. It is focusing specifically on defense. They are doing what is called expenditure review, like reviewing over the years spending in different areas? Has it been efficient? So that they can also come up with a, but that is a side issue. I am in liaison with them. I've seen some of their draft report. They're still working on it, but in engaging with the department as well. So there is a dedicated work now to drill down to what, with what you have now, are there some areas where some efficiency gain can be realized, like issues that you are highlighting of leasing of aircraft and etc. But there is a drilling down at a program and sub-program level at a very lower level. So we are working with GTEC and in liaison with the Department of Defense at a very, very technical level, at a lower level. And we hope once the report is out, it will be published and we'll be able to share with yourselves. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You correct. Your observation is correct, Umashudu, that the mood and the attitude in this committee has always been the one of saying that Treasury lacks understanding and it's very insensitive on matters of the Defence Force. But I think we are comforted about the matter that you are not opposed to refunding the money from the United Nations, because that has been the one of the biggest problems for the department and also for this committee, as the honorable members have indicated in their contribution here. And then most of the issues that you also raised, it's just unfortunate, honorable members, who haven't as yet received the implementation plan, the Defense Review Implementation Plan presentation. So, because most of the issues will still go back to the, we can get answers from that presentation. And we will, the presentation, I understand, will be ready very soon. And we may have to call you back again, depending on what we get from that presentation. And honorable members, I also suggest that at a certain stage, we must call the task team to this meeting to give us a broader presentation. I'm not just sure as to whether we should do it before the presentation on the implementation plan of the defense review or after that. That is something that will work out at the operational level now, but we would say that the secretaries must put it in the program of our next term. And I think with those words, we need to adjourn our meeting until we meet again. And I would say to honorable members that we were supposed to deal with the minutes. We're not in the position to deal with the minutes today. We'll deal with them in our next meeting. Our meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
And it copies immediately and under a good pitch. Pile is very easy for me. Otherwise.
No.